Good morning, good morning, good morning. Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I just want to say happy Monday to everyone. Thank you for tuning in. We definitely appreciate your support. And I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be evangelists for the Roundtable Talk Show. Share the show, tweet the show, text a friend, let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live. Because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And she is with us every Monday. She winds up co-hosting the show. We got her here today. And she's going to talk to us about what's going on in her life. Miss Allison Allman, the organization Maven. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. You know, it's my favorite day. It's Monday. We get to start out our week wonderfully and have a great week. I love Mondays.
I do too. And your energy always makes it that much more amazing. Now, I have questions for you, but do you have updates for us before I start a barrage of the Sharifa Hardy questions?
No, actually, I don't know. I don't have any trending breaking news today like I normally do on Mondays. I haven't had any change in my business. Everything has kind of been the same. We're still dealing with distance learning and how to maximize our space. I didn't do anything revolutionary this week. I organized a walk-in pantry. That was the highlight of my week.
But that's not going to be the highlight for long. One of the things that I was excited about is we are doing the Power by Purpose two-day teleconference. And every time you're on the show, you give us, you tell us about how to do this, how to do SEO, how to do social media marketing, how to be creative in your social, in your, what is it? The 6 feet impact for the dinner table. What is that called?
Oh, you mean the 6 degrees of separation that we all know Kevin Bacon?
Yes, that. You focus on that. But out of everything that you focus on, you want to teach people about organizing their business. Why was that so important to you?
Well, I kind of feel like everyone I run into like people that feel like terrible about themselves because they're creatives. And so they feel terrible that their house isn't organized or that they're kind of all over the place. Like, I run into people that kind of feel guilty. And I'm like, look, you're awesome at what you do. You're creative. You make paintings. You can look at something and add a pop of color, like for fashion and whatnot. It isn't part of your nature to be technical or organized. I truly see things similar to the Matrix, which sounds very silly because the Matrix was so many years ago, but I truly see things differently and I move things around in my mind. So like when I go do a consultation, I can see right away it's a real, in my opinion, easy fix. I move this, I move that, bam, the space is better. And yet they look at it every day, all day long, and it frustrates them or it overwhelms them or it makes them feel different things. And so it's just, I just see things differently. And so I'm able to walk in and just be like, I know what to do. That it's a rarity that I walk in and I'm stumped. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, that's a rarity. Usually I go home, I think about it. It's a puzzle. It truly is. I break down the project into the simplest ways for me to be like, oh, I understand what I'm doing here. Oh, this is what I need to be done. Okay, this is what I'm going to go do. And so, it's truly like a puzzle. I often refer to it as a puzzle with no picture, because people that complete puzzles, they look at the picture and they match up the pieces to the picture. But a lot of times my puzzle has no picture and I'm trying to put it together by just the shapes. And that's a really hard task. If you ever try to, like, if anyone ever decides to turn the pieces over where there's no picture and you literally have to put it together by the shapes of each puzzle, that is a challenge. That's my day-to-day life every day. I'm putting things together by shape and not so much by the picture.
That was a lot of information. So now you want to help businesses do the same thing. Entrepreneurs, are these people who are working virtually?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to help people that have direct sales businesses that already have a model, so to speak, that their company provides. But kind of where that company kind of drops the ball is sometimes they need like like role playing, like how to what to do when someone says this conversation stopper, or or how do I reach a certain I think I touched on this last week, where some of the direct sales company gals that I talked to, they're like, oh, I want to talk to anyone that has skin from the baby to the grave. My products are good for them. And I know I talked on this last week. And I'm like, really? From the babies from the grave? Well, how many babies are on Instagram? And then they're like, oh, well, their moms are on Instagram. And I'm like, okay, so then tell me more about the moms, that you're trying to, sell to and whatnot. So I think like I kind of help fill in that gap that corporate kind of just gives them the outline of how to run their business, but there isn't anyone that they can go to for conversation stoppers or for dialing into who their exact demographic is. So, I don't know, I kind of just help with all that.
I like that. So I had a question for you, Allison. Do you remember Bell Walker?
No, am I supposed to?
You might. I don't know, but I want to go ahead and introduce you. We'll come back to you, but I
Oh,
want to introduce
I thought you said Bill Walker, and I'm like, Bell
Bell.
is a bear, but I don't know Bill.
Bell Walker. We're going to reintroduce Bell Walker. She has been a guest. Stop laughing, Allison. She has been a guest on the Roundtable talk show several times. I enjoy the information that she shares whenever she's on a guest on the show. Ms. Bell Walker, Walker Consulting. She is an organizational efficiency engineer, and she's going to talk to us about her updates and her interactive workshops. Good morning, Bell. How are you?
Good morning, Ms. Sharifa. I am doing great. Much like you and Allison, I love Mondays because I spend my weekends getting refreshed, rejuvenated, and I'm just so excited to hit the week running. First thing Monday mornings, and the best ones are where I join you. So, gonna be a good week.
Thank you. I love that. I love that. Now, we talked a little earlier about some of your exciting updates. Talk to us about your new workshops that you're offering.
Yeah, so I realized that I've been offering workshops for a while, but I didn't have a good way for people who had never experienced the workshops to get a sense of what I'm doing. And so I wanted to bring an open invitation to anyone who's interested to learn some of what I cover in greater detail, because I'm a big believer that if I can, impart some skills, share some wisdom in an hour, then I should absolutely make that available to anybody who's willing to give me an hour of their time. And so we talked a little bit before the show. You mentioned looking for people who want to teach, not talk. And I've sat through enough talking webinars in the past couple months to last me forever. So I wanted to make sure I was bringing something a little different to the table. So my webinars do have a little bit of talking because I need to get some concepts and principles percolating. But then we go off into breakout rooms with a case study that I have designed to help cement and solidify. So anyone who comes to these webinars gets to actively participate and put into practice the principles I discuss, which will hopefully get them thinking about how they could do some of the same techniques and tips for their organization.
That's very interesting. I know we were discussing prior to the show the whole teaching and not talking. And that was based on a conversation with I had with several people who were talking about some of the webinars that they have been attending. So everyone's in this mode of let's learn. You can take free classes on just about every website there is right now. And there are people who don't want to be that self-taught student. They want opportunities to learn, but then after the webinars, they feel like, okay, I heard what they have to say, but I don't necessarily understand the action steps, the next steps are necessary to make that change in their lives. So I love the aspect that yours is interactive.
Yeah, to be honest, I've struggled a little bit with what to call it because it isn't really a webinar with that engagement piece. But it also isn't fully a workshop the way I would like to think about it, because we are doing a case study. We're not directly addressing sort of these real world challenges. I mean, they are real world, but not for the participants. So interactive webinar is what I've gone with for now. And if any brilliant minds have a better suggestion, I'm open to it.
Speaking of brilliant minds, I'm going to come back to you, Bill, but I'm going to go introduce our next guest, who looks at the world a little different, or that's what he told me in his bio, Mr. Daniel Feynman, who's going to talk to us about how to build it backwards. He's an international renowned consultant, trainer, and author. And right now, he's going to talk to us about his third book in a series. Good morning, Daniel. How are you?
I'm fine, Sharifa. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. I'm excited to learn about building it backwards.
Well, good. This literally came to me, I have to be honest, it wasn't really my idea with the name. My advisory board had been working to get me to change the name of the company for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And finally, in a meeting, they pushed me up against the wall and said, "Why are you resisting this? This is the way you work. It's more effective." So literally that day, I changed the name of the company, started working on my second book. The third book that we came out with really put the concept into practice, and it's made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. So and what does it mean to build it backwards?
Thanks for asking that. Almost all organizations and individuals look forward and say, "I want to do X," or "I need to do Y." And the problem is we keep doing the same things, expecting a different result, which is what Einstein defined as insanity. And what we found, and this came through a lot of blood, sweat, and tears over the years, is if you look at your ideal future, you look at your perfect horizon 10, 20 years from today, and you write it up on the wall, this is what the organization should look like, this is what I want to accomplish. And then you turn around from that future point and build your success roadmap backwards, and we have an 8-step process to do that, you look at the world differently. And because you have given up on all of your current limitations, you're much more successful in creating a tool, a vision, and an actual roadmap with actions that every organization is more successful doing. So that's the concept behind Build It Backwards. And I'm thrilled to share it with my clients because they always do better than they were doing otherwise.
You say your clients, one of the things that Allison talked about earlier was people who tend to market from everyone from the baby to the grave or the senior citizen. And that's such a wide audience. But in business, sometimes I believe at least that we tend to generalize and go after, if you implement this strategy and these steps and you build it backwards, it would apply to any business. Does it apply to any business?
It literally does. I've worked with insurance companies and accounting firms and alfalfa farms and small manufacturers. The model, which we've obviously morphed and edited over time, works with every industry from startups on up. You know, our typical client is a small business, but you have to decide what you mean by a small business. To Bank of America, a small business is 100 to 500 million. But the model
That's not
works.
Me.
Any industry, any size, the model works because strategy is strategy and implementation is implementation.
Okay, so what are some of the basic strategies to build it backwards?
Well, you start with a vision. What is your perfect horizon? Then you create your mission. What is the business that you're in that is going to take you to achieve your vision? What are your core values? Because we always want to have values in the company that everybody knows and can live by to make decisions, even if the boss isn't around. Then you create a plan, literally from the future back to today. You define actions each individual will take and they step up. Say, I'll do X, I'll do Y. You write those down. You have everything that's measurable. So if it's measurable, if it's quantifiable, you get back to SMART goals. Then you do it. Then you measure it and say, what worked, we'll keep doing. What isn't working, we need to tweak. and then you repeat that process. That's building it backwards. That is always more successful than the traditional route.
Mm-hmm. Where's your book? Can we see a copy of your book?
Just happen to have.
Just happen to.
Let's get it in the screen.
I like it. I like it. We'll definitely have to check it out because we need more information on how to create successful businesses, business owners, business, small business is the heartbeat of America. Even though our next guest is in Singapore, we'll still wave the American flag for him. But what was interesting about his bio, it was something I always think about, being a solo entrepreneur. Sometimes we often feel alone. So he's going to talk to us about his book. He is the author of The Accidental Business Nomad, and he's a member of a leadership nomad group. So we want to introduce Mr. Kyle Haggerty. Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
Good morning. Good evening. the fun games of time zone differences.
Yes, we're all awake. We're excited. It's Monday morning and you're over there in the middle of the night.
I'm speaking to you from the future. So the Monday turns out to be just fine. And we're already planning for Tuesday. So I'm building this backwards. This Monday is going backwards.
That's the end. Like we live. Life goes on. Amazing.
It all works out.
So Kyle, one of the things that I feel like as an entrepreneur is I feel like a nomad. I feel like I'm always on my own. That's why I really appreciate the return guests. Not that I don't like the new people because I tend to kind of keep you as a part of everything that I'm doing. But when you're in corporate America, you have that group that you socialize with. You have the people that you see every day. You have your coworkers you go to lunch with. And one of the things that I've been told about this whole global pandemic that has been so hard for people who, aside from just losing their business, is they lose that community. Some people have known their employees or coworkers longer than they've known their children. So now we feel alone. So tell us a little bit, I just kind of rambled for a minute about being, you know, I'm lonely. That was the whole gist of what I was saying. I'm lonely. So talk to me, Kyle.
Look, I think that, you know, I've always liked the word nomad. I think that it's got a lot of things going on with it, but I actually think about it more from a mental standpoint than a physical standpoint, even though a lot of what I have been doing has been a lot of travel. Mm-hmm. Now that we're all in lockdown, the nomadic component happens on Zoom, but it still mm-hmm. happens. The big argument that I'm making is that the book was written before COVID hit, but the argument was that more and more companies, even small companies, are almost born global. They find that they might have clients that are overseas on day one. They may have partners, resellers, distributors, parts of their supply chain might be overseas. And business is done differently in different parts of the world. So you talk about being a nomad, one Zoom call, you might be talking to your next door neighbor about a deal. And then the next click of a button, you're talking to somebody in India, and then you're trying to come up with a partnership agreement in Singapore. We've gone global without having to even use passports. Mm-hmm. And this is accelerated in 2020. So I wrote this book that basically argues that I think that we've gone global so quickly, but most of us don't really understand the complexities from a culture standpoint and just from all the moving pieces. So hopefully people can have some fun with it and embrace the chaos. And maybe that won't keep us just as lonely in these lockdown moments that we're facing.
I have people like Bell Walker and Allison Allman who join me and kind of come lonely. Together. Yes, I am. Every day I meet new people, but after the show ends and the curtain, you know, comes down, then what?
Look, there. You know, the road warrior. I think before COVID hit, I think we had a tagline which was like, I don't know, it's a global road warrior. And I think even the cover, I happen to have a cover copy myself. You know, it's this kind of madman looking guy or the, you know, briefcase wandering around. And I think that, you know, anybody who's done a lot of business travel, there's been that element of loneliness, right? So mm-hmm. the exciting glory of international travel when you're sitting in a forgive the language, a crappy motel in mm-hmm. anywhere in the world, which kind of looks the same anyway these days.
Yes.
You know, the excitement can wear off very quickly. So I think yes. that certainly for people that spend a lot of time traveling, in many ways, actually, I think a lot of us who have been working remotely for the number of years, like I have for the last 15 years, mm-hmm. I'm dealing with more people now than I normally do. I've got all these family members; they won't leave the house anymore. I'm the opposite. I'm waiting for this to get back to normal so I can have some more alone time.
I agree. And I have more questions for you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. So we're going to talk about business, but we're also going to talk about health and about her passion. We have Cynthia, founder of This Diabetic. She's going to share her incredible story as well as what she's doing to help the world. Good morning, Cynthia. How are you? You're on mute.
I am so sorry.
It's
I'm so
okay.
happy to be here. How are you?
I'm excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Now, I was reading your bios, reading your information, and one of the things that always stands out to me in bios is the story. You know what I'm saying? Because people list a lot of their credentials and they have this and they're certified in that. And that to me is all well and good. But when you've experienced it and you can share your experience with the world, that's what stands out to me. So tell us a little bit about your story, Cynthia, and how you got here.
Okay, I am a type 1 diabetic. I've been type 1 for a little over 30 years, and I always hid my diabetes. It was something I learned to master very, very well. I had great control, and the less people that knew that I had it, the better it was. And then I had a life and death situation, and not related to diabetes, but I came out of that thinking, time is very fleeting. And it became very clear to me through that life and death experience that I needed to make a difference in my diabetic world before I moved on to the next plane. And I don't know, do you know anybody who's diabetic?
Yes, definitely. Too many.
Did you ever watch them check their sugar level?
Yes.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, I mean, when you check your sugar level, you prick your finger and you put it on a meter and it measures your sugar, but you're left with blood on your hand. And so while I was in the hospital, the intern came in, or the doctor came in and looked at my chart and noted that I was a diabetic. And he said, hey, can you do me a favor and check your sugar level? And when I did, it was so embarrassing to me because that was a private thing. I never shared it with anybody. It was like asking me to stand in front of a stage naked. Actually, I think standing in front of a stage naked would have been less embarrassing to me because I had the nasty habit of, after checking my sugar level on the case, I would wipe the blood on the right side of the mesh. And so when I opened up my case, there was literally a cake of blood on the right side of the can. I was so horribly embarrassed and ashamed. And so after almost losing my life, I was like, you know what? I'm going to make my mess my message, because I can't be the only diabetic out there who feels the social pressure, unacceptable, ashamed. And I threw myself into designing things that make diabetes easier and that don't look medical. And don't scream, I have a disease, because, you know, the type 1 from 2017, this is a CDC number, 2017 to 2020 is up 30%. So that's not genetic. And that's a lot of kids that now have to go back to school or with their friends and have to carry around equipment because it's required for daily life. And so what I did was I jumped in and I made stuff that looks normal, like, this is where you blot your blood. Like, after you check your sugar level, you press on the white and you just turn it. And so no bloody polka dotted tissues, no licking your blood, because that's what most diabetics do. I need like little duffel bags, right? That are cute, that hold all your stuff and it doesn't scream, I have a disease. That was the backpack, because the duffel bag, like, just, you know, a tackle diabetes box. So my main mission is to just deal with mindset first before diabetes. When your mindset is soaring and powerful, everything else falls into place and diabetes is so much easier to handle.
I think that's wonderful. I just want to thank Jade Elizabeth for tuning in. Jade says, good morning. Good morning to you, Jade. Amy Trout Hughes has a statement for you, Cynthia. She says, I've heard the phrase, make the mess your message at least 10 times in the last 2 weeks.
That's a message to her.
That's what she said. I think it's a sign.
It's definitely a sign. The angels work in weird ways. 100%. Tell her to follow that.
Yes. Yeah, so whatever you need to hear, Amy, that was the message. I want to go over to Daniel real quick, because I noticed, Cynthia, when you asked the question about if we knew any diabetics, and Daniel put up his hand. And so was this helpful for you, Daniel? What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were, I'm a diabetic, and so is everybody else in the family. It's hereditary. We're all type 2. And yes, finger prick, lick the blood. That's
so bad during COVID.
Right. But what I've done is I haven't broadcast. I don't wear t-shirts that say I'm type 2, although I have been very involved with Diabetes Association and the ride, is I'm active athletically. And when it comes up, I just let people know.
Yeah, that was hard for me. I became diabetic when my father passed away at 18. It was very hard for me to talk about it because it was all tied into that tumultuous time, horrific time during my life. So I just learned to, this is what I need to do, would deal with it. And I would keep it out of sight, out of mind, out of whatever, and just in very tight control. So
I can imagine that. Kyle, I want to go over to you real quick. Is that part of the business nomad, just kind of dealing with life and dealing with situations?
Yeah, I think that, I'll tell you a kind of a side story on this. There was a company that reached out to me. It's an American company that was doing diabetes. They were doing health work for companies. And so they put a software together for large companies that gave advice to employees. And it was like a lifestyle, it was a lifestyle play. They used diabetes metrics, just to talk about the diabetes specifically, to figure out which markets to go into, because they were looking for people that might be, it might benefit them. But from an international standpoint, the mistake that they made was that they focused on that research rather than local lifestyle behavior, because their software was advising people to park their cars in a parking lot far away from the office so they could walk more. I mean, all of their advice was fine. Eat less bread, all of these things. Most people in their 20s are bachelors, bachelorettes. They don't live at home anymore, so they cook on their own. So here were some diet ideas for them.
So they order pizza, basically.
Sure, all of these things, right? Well, guess what? Like, they went into China, because there was some massive, China has incredibly high diabetes rates. I think, probably more in total than anyone else. But none of the advice was relevant. Nobody has cars. Nobody eats bread. I'm saying nobody, I'm speaking in generalizations here, but the point was that the entire lifestyle was different. Their entire solution was not fit for this market. I know I'm kind of taking this diabetes story.
No, but it's interesting. I'm learning a lot. I'm interested.
The other thing is that certainly here in Singapore, people are in their 20s don't live alone. It's just not how things work here. They go to university and they often stay in their own homes. And then when they get married, they either go to their family home or they go to the spouse's family home. There's never that, like, it was a very American-centric or Western-centric mindset in terms of the assumptions that were being made. And so the company, very quickly, when they realized how different lifestyles were in different parts of the world, it was interesting because the ultimate problem was the same. The challenges were the same, but the ways to make recommendations and to help people were radically different. So again, diabetes, that was, it's not exactly your question, but that's what came to mind.
I'm actually kind of curious, Cynthia, if you've been keeping up with the release of the Babysitter's Club series on Netflix, because like I think many women my age, my first real introduction to diabetes was the Babysitter Club book.
DC.
Yeah, DC was a diabetic. And so in the show that they've launched, they kind of brought those stories into the modern world. And there's an entire episode that, sort of spoiler alert, ends with her finding a way to not necessarily wear a t-shirt saying I'm diabetic, but to have her insulin pump, you know, all blinged out and kind of front and center, not hidden anymore, but it's part of her and who she is, which really sort of resonated with what you were saying. So if you're not aware of that episode, I feel like it's...
I am not aware of that. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And I'm glad... Look, it's a twofold sword, right? When I first became diabetic, nobody knew what that was except for one random grandma who had type 2. And today it's become such a normal or more normal thing. And it's a two-edged sword because you really don't want this to become normal. I mean, I don't wish this burden on anybody, but if you are in this burden, you want to feel empowered and feel that there are no limits, none. I mean, when I became diabetic, I used to constantly mantra say to myself, there's nothing I can't do except fly a plane. I can do anything except fly a plane because we weren't allowed to get a pilot's license.
I actually I know someone who managed to get their
yes,
medical.
I was so excited.
15 years ago. 15 years ago, type 1 diabetes. Yep.
I didn't know about the 15. I knew the first one in my area got one like a couple of, and I was so elated. Like, I can't explain what that meant to me. Because I'm like, there you go. Now there's no limits, none. So that's important. Mindset needs to be addressed first before even the sugar.
Yes,
for sure.
Absolutely. I wanted to go back over to Kyle because we went aside to tangent and you shared this story. But I wanted to know, after they came up with these conclusions and they drew the results, did they make any further recommendations? Did they make any change?
They left.
I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, no, they just making sure I'm on mute, off mute. They pulled out. They realized they were in over their head too early. The mistake that they made was they were using medical data points, which absolutely valid, but they realized that there was so much more going on and that they were not yet ready. So it's a bit of a letdown kind of ending story, but oftentimes when companies do the right thing, which is to do the market research before they go somewhere else, oftentimes they realize that there's some unintended or unexpected complications. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the money, time, and ability to solve for it, you are not ready to go into these markets. So yeah, I wish I had a better answer for that story, but that was the real answer.
No, I mean, I just wanted to know what happened. I felt like I got the majority of the movie and it just went off. So I just wanted
to
know
how. That's the thing. These don't always have the happily ever after story where, you know, all of a sudden they realized they needed to, you know, what they could have done was, would have been to, they would have had to rebuild the entire solution from the ground up using local knowledge. Is it doable? Absolutely. It might already exist as well. So maybe there's a partnership opportunity. In this case, it just disappeared. I have this weird, like, it's a weird success when you talk somebody out of expanding. That's not why people call me, but I would probably say I have the highest ROI when people just, you know what, we're going to put that $10 million back in our pocket and rethink things before we go. It's hard to write a case study about that.
That's funny.
But that's a good skill to have. I mean, at least they listen, they come to you for information and advice, sort of like Alison Allman. She comes in and she just turns people's world around, whip them in shape, get them all organized.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that's what you need sometimes to kind of shock therapy.
Yes,
Yeah. Well, I wanted to add, I know how earlier, Kyle, you had said that you can't wait for things to get back to normal so you can have like your alone time and you're used to, you know, working from home a certain way. This came up on a Friday. Usually Friday mornings, I go to several different networking meetings. Only since COVID started. Previous to COVID, Friday, my only networking day was Tuesday, but I've kind of taken Friday in on my schedule. And so I know that people feel very disconnected at home. This is not that. I like that I can go to about four different networking meetings on Friday morning and literally not have to drive anywhere, not have to look for parking. I drive a vehicle that eats a lot of gas, and we live in kind of a hilly area, so you can just imagine how often I go to the gas station. And so then I have to park, and then I have to make small talk with people I don't want to make small talk with. And then I have to eat food or eat a muffin, or networking meetings are at a restaurant, so I have to buy something because the server is helping us, and I don't really like Olive Garden that much, and you know, then I have to figure, so all of that has been eliminated for me, and I literally click on smile, make sure everything, all this part looks good, and then, you know, and then I go, hey, I gotta go, and I just click off and go on to another one. There's no driving, there's no small talk, there's no eating, and you know, and I get the most done in those 4 hours. Like I get, you know, four different networking meetings done. You know, I talk to the right people I need to talk to. People instant message me or text me all the time during the meeting. So I still feel I'm getting leads. I still feel that I'm connecting in some ways. If anything, I'm probably going to more networking meetings because before I was so busy working that networking was a form of marketing, but I just didn't have time for it. Like because to me, again, I'd have to take my morning off. I'd have to drive around. I'd have to, you know, drink coffee and talk to people. Some people I don't want to talk to, you know, like.
I thought you loved everyone, Allison. I thought you wanted to talk to everyone.
I do. This helps me reach more people in a concentrated amount of time. Like before, I can only go to one networking meeting, drive, sit in traffic, all that kind of stuff. And here, like I said, I have my Friday mornings panned out. I go to a 7:30 networking meeting that ends at 8:29, and then 8:45 another one starts, and that ends at 9:30, and then there's another one that starts at 11 and ends at 1. So I mean, literally, in that 15 minutes, there'd be no way that I could drive from Yorba Linda to Anaheim Hills. I mean, on paper, it's only 7 miles, but in real world, it's like 45 minutes.
It is California. I want to go over to Daniel real quick.
Sharif,
you're muted.
Sorry. I was trying to do something real quick. I was getting an echo. I don't know if anyone else heard that echo, but I was trying to fix it. But Daniel, I was listening to what Cynthia was saying, and we heard her story. We heard how passionate she was. But one of the things that interests me is she created a business from it. And I saw a certain aspect of the model, even in creating a business, because the first thing was she saw a problem. And so she had to find a solution for this problem. So do you see that in the aspect in what Cynthia's doing?
Absolutely. And I wish more people would take Cynthia's lead. And, you know, there's that old story about if life gives you lemons, turn it into lemonade, or if, you know, look at the mess and turn it into the message. I like both of those very much. And so Cynthia saw a situation. I like to not use the word problem. She saw a situation and she said, what can I do with this? How can I turn this positive? How can I leverage it? And I wish more companies would look at the challenges they have, and instead of throwing up their hands or working around them and ignoring them, literally facing them head on and say, okay, this is a challenge. This isn't our way. How do we fix it? What do we need to do? If more organizations would do that, if more individuals would do that, I think they would see surprisingly quick results, because we've done that. We've literally gone into firms, done an assessment one day, laid out a plan in the second day, and started to implement in the third day, and they see results by the end of day three rather than the end of year three.
I think that's excellent. Bill, you work with your clients as well to help them understand a part of the process.
Yeah, so the part that I tend to look at is what I call the invisible infrastructure. So looking at the various pieces of the business that sort of guide how people do their work day to day. So an organizational structure is probably the most front and center element, but an organizational structure interacts with many other pieces of the business. So looking at how your incentive plans are structured, if you've got programs, how those matrix in, looking at your communication norms, do you have pull versus push information management mentalities? What are your cadences, meeting cycles, the tools that you're using? All of these pieces were implemented and grew and evolved over time. And for many business owners, they considered each one as an independent situation, opportunity, challenge, pick your favorite word, when they felt some stress around it. It's very rare that I see leaders who consider multiple pieces at once. And so that was actually exactly what led into my Friction to Function interactive webinars that I talked about before, is helping leaders to take a step back and see where there might be misalignments or tension being caused by these diverging invisible infrastructure pieces, where employees find themselves being pulled in multiple directions. And I believe Kyle or Daniel, one of you were talking about values earlier. And I've even seen cases where values caused some of these tensions, where you might have a value around failing fast, right? Trying new things, moving quickly. And you might have a value around clear, transparent, open communication, which often requires a certain degree of documentation. And those two values can find themselves in conflict, right? You want to document very clearly, but you also want to move really quickly. You can certainly have both, but if you don't take the time to prioritize clearly across them, it's just going to end up leaving people feeling vaguely schizophrenic, where they're really serious about documentation, but now they're not going fast enough, but now they're not documenting, and nobody wins in that scenario.
I love when you're on the show, Bill. You explain things in a way I have never heard before, but it's like, yes, that's just exactly the feeling that comes over you when you're trying to figure all of this out on your own.
Yeah, and so I think of the value of what many of us on this roundtable today bring to our clients is some of that third-party perspective, mm-hmm. right? Because it's, I've been a senior leader of fairly sizable teams, and I've tried to bring all these practices, to my own work. And I've done it, and I feel like I've done it fairly successfully, but it is so hard when you are in the business day to day to take that step back. It is so much effort and energy because it's not where you need to be most of the time. And so bringing in someone who can provide that perspective can help you make those changes that you need, that you would be able to make for anyone else's business potentially so much faster and more effectively for your own.
I agree. Now, Cynthia, I love what you're doing, and it's an amazing story, but was it difficult for you to start the business aspect?
You know what? I am like the accidental entrepreneur. I never intended that to be my road. Mm-hmm. And the passion for making a difference overshadowed any fear, overshadowed any obstacle, overshadowed anything. And I really, the way I structured it was that I took each step one at a time. And I said, okay, this week, what do I need to accomplish? This week, the next week. And looking back, yeah, it was a really long road. You know, I wrote my own patent, and then I hired patent attorneys, and that whole world was, I'm a mom of two. So I think that your drive and your passion needs to be superior. Your mission, your why, you hear that all the time. It needs to be at the forefront, because the obstacles, you won't find a way to get through them or past them or over them unless you have that kind of drive.
Yes. Kyle, Cynthia talked about the accidental entrepreneur. So how does one become an accidental business nomad?
I think I have this, I'm a huge, you talk about the words like values, and as an American who's lived outside of America for almost 15 years, you actually see America from the outside. You see yourself many times from the outside, which is a really, you can only see it that way when you're not there. And you start thinking about more about values. And I think that right now in the US, it's a time to really have that conversation about values. And one of the things that stuck out to me as an American living in other parts of the world was, it sounds corny, but it's the American dream. It's the ability, or it's the belief that people can rise up from, there's opportunity and there's options out there for people. You know, anybody can make it. And you see that in other parts of the world where they cannot. Mm-hmm. And that oftentimes is based on certain social structures and ceilings that are very much more apparent that you don't get. And I just think that there's this amazing mindset in the US, and it's quite, frankly, it's something that I miss, because I think that there's this, you know, and this, everybody on this panel has expressed this energy and enthusiasm and optimism. Mm-hmm. And that's a very American trait. And it makes me very proud to be an American. And that's sometimes a difficult statement these days in many times. But I would say that, I think that what's happened is that the American dream has gone global. And I think that a lot of Americans don't realize that. That's a good thing for the planet, but it's not, but it's going to mean there's a lot more competition out there. Uh-huh. I argue I became accidentally a business nomad because my industry went all overseas. I was from the call center business. I mean, my background is call centers. And in the early 2000s, they went to India. And, you know, you either lose your job, you get laid off, or you do something else. Or in my case, I got on a plane and went to figure out what the heck was going on. And that was never my plan. That's why I would argue I was a bit of an accidental business nomad. But I'm kind of rambling a little bit here. But I think that there are opportunities for small businesses, especially. Mm-hmm. I think the need to think overseas or to kind of ignore borders will open up opportunities in multiples for, you know, people here, for people listening. If you start opening up and seeing that the American dream is now probably our most powerful export, we're the best people to help drive it and be a part of that. But it, you know, it means being able to look outside of probably what many of us are used to looking at. I don't know if any of that makes sense, but it's getting late here, so I'm starting to ramble.
You know what? But you're speaking, and I can look at the panel, and everyone is nodding their heads and smiling because what you said to me, and I'll, you know, everybody else can chime in. What came across to me was a lot of emotion. It was a lot of pride in not only America, but this idea of opportunity. And just hearing you, I can completely relate, because I tell people the one business, the one website that completely revolutionized my life and revolutionized my business was Fiverr. And sometimes I feel guilty because I can go to Fiverr and I can get a logo or a press release or whatever I need for $5. And I understand, like, I would never pay $100 or $250 anymore when I can get the same great artistic work for $5. Or maybe I pay a little bit more and pay $10. And the majority of the people who do the work, they are not in America. So I say, okay, Sharifa, but you're taking away American jobs. I'm like, okay, but maybe I'm creating opportunity in that side of the world. So I actually had that entire conversation in my head that no question. You expressed in that emotion.
And it's confusing, and it's confusing, and it's complicated. And it's probably a perfect definition of creative destruction. Mm-hmm. But you know, in my situation, it was like, I need to either move or this thing is just going to wipe me out. You know, I'm going to find myself stuck. So,
yes,
I'd like to chime in there a moment. When I was doing the diabetic bags, there are many pockets and zippers of stuff that needs to be held. And I went to three different American manufacturers trying to find someone who would at least just make a prototype for me. And I got sent and shoveled to the next one and sent and shoveled to the next one. And finally, the last guy was like, look, honey, you want me to tell you what the truth is? The truth is, here in America, he's like, we want to make bags that takes 30 seconds to make on a sewing machine. Zip, 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 zipper, done. And I'm like, well, he's like, no one is going to take the time to zipper all those pockets and make all those snaps and buttons and elastic portions over here. So what they said to me is, I have someone who goes overseas. He is the only solution you are going to find. And I really, really turned over every corner that was available to me to try and manufacture here, but I couldn't do it.
So, I mean, Cynthia, your example, you know, Sharifa, your example, it's going to just become exponential. 2020 has launched so many more industries to be global. And I'm not here to say that this is a great thing, right? This is going to be complicated and this is going to be very messy. But for many people out there, the resumes that are going to come across people's desks just went up by a billion. The reason is because we're all doing this virtually. Yes. I don't need to be next door to any of you to work on your team. You don't need to hire people within a radius of an office space necessarily, right? It depends on the industry. And when that whole thing falls apart, which has happened this year, that's a massive game shift. I'm making this argument that globalization this year has accelerated faster than possibly ever before.
Yes, I would definitely agree with you.
Yeah, and it's a counterintuitive argument because when you hear about globalization, you hear about the slowdown and the supply chains coming back and the tariffs. I think there's another counter story going on that's going to be much more impactful down the road.
But I see that there are so many questions. With every answer, there's a new question. Like I've been following the whole argument with Facebook. Now the majority of Facebook's employees are working from home. But right. If you're working virtually, what's the need to work in Palo Alto? You can get paid a Palo Alto salary, but now you're living in Des Moines. You know what I mean? So the companies are like, okay, why am I paying you this amount when now your cost of living is this amount? So for every answer we get, there's more and more questions. Daniel, I believe you were getting ready to say something.
Yeah, to Kyle's point and expanding it, I think across our entire spectrum here, I'm a recovering banker. I left commercial banking 26 years ago to start my firm, but I had the pleasure of working in 30 different countries around the world. And to Kyle's point, attitudes, approaches, outlooks vary significantly in different countries and even within a given country with different types of people. They're very entrepreneurial people I've met in China and India and Venezuela, and there are people who are just looking for a 9-to-5 or the equivalent. So it's proactive versus reactive. And if we can export our enthusiasm, our entrepreneurship, and commoditize it, it certainly would solve a lot of issues. We haven't figured out a way to commoditize it yet, but the mindset, I think Kyle is right, has been to some degree, where it's allowed, has migrated across borders. What I have seen is those people who are willing to take Cynthia's attitude of, I'm gonna do something rather than just sit back. I'm gonna be proactive. You can find in almost any situation, in almost any country, in almost any industry, you can find a way to start, expand, or improve a business if you choose to. And those are the people that I choose to work with, because if I can make a difference, if I can teach you some tools, then the world, your organization, and your people all do better for it.
And where can we learn more about some of those tools, Daniel?
Well, you could go to our website, you could give me a call, you could send me an email. You could just call me on the phone and go, hey, Feynman, can you share a tool?
I like that. That's wonderful. Allison, we're talking about globalization. What are your thoughts?
Well, I definitely, the part that I could relate to was, you know, I've noticed even through our pandemic here locally that people have been pivoting. And they, I noticed a rise in people just being, I guess, more scrappy or more problem solvers of, okay, I need to make an income now. What am I going to do for a living? you know, what am I going to sell? What am I going to do? Oh, I like baking. I always made cupcakes for everyone in the family and they always said it was good. You know, I think the mentality of being able to, you know, turn anything into a business is, you know, I've just talked from, I've had a few opportunities where someone has moved from overseas here and they feel very limited in their head as to how to organize a certain space. Like I'll be like, well, why can't I do this? Or why can't I do that? And they're like, well, no, I only have this much space to work with. I'm like, right, but we can use the walls. We can use this, we can use that. And I think in so when Kyle was talking about, you know, the different ceilings that are, I think they bring it with them sometimes because they're raised a certain way or, you know, how they're trained by their family on how their class is to be. And then we come here and we're like, yeah, we just poke holes in all their little ideals because we're used to raising, having no limits. I mean, a lot of it's just how we're raised here.
But, I agree. Yeah. Definitely agree. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show and I completely enjoyed this show. I learned a lot. You have to look at different things from different perspectives. And that's why I like to bring different people together to have these roundtable discussions. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching live, as well as everyone who watches this show in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Dale.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to kick off, and I've really enjoyed being on a panel with such a varied set of perspectives and mentalities. But there's still that common theme running through of following passions and making sure that you're bringing that passion to your business for its long-term survival. So for me, I would say anyone who's interested in joining an interactive Friction to Function webinar, I'll be announcing the next date and time later today on LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn, or you can contact me on www.bellevueconsulting.com. Looking forward to sharing some fun and some wisdom.
Thank you, Belle. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Allison, briefly, what do you have for us?
I just welcome anyone that is having struggles with organizing in Southern California to contact me. I'm starting to do a little bit of more virtually and giving some more tips, on different situations. Real brief, someone showed me over the weekend how they had organized. They were so proud of themselves for organizing their fridge and they sent me images. And then I looked at all their condiments on the door and I go, oh, if you use an empty egg crate to turn all your mustards and ketchups upside down, then it's easy dispensing and the egg crate catches all the drips and stuff. And she was like mind blown. And I go, oh, okay, this is just another tip that I just go into any house and this is what I do. So I'm kind of expanding more on my tips. And so people can find me through the organization Maven. There's more speaking engagements coming up and probably a book in the works that I just don't know about because I'm discovering what's so easy and normal for me is mind blowing to everyone I talk to.
And I'll read that book and we'll definitely be able to promote it. So thank you, Allison. Want to go over to Daniel. Daniel, what do you have for us?
Well, the next seminar I'm doing, actually we're doing a webinar this Wednesday on COVID-19 budgeting strategies during a crisis. And I'll be putting up a new link on LinkedIn for that. And just remember, if you want to do something, do it. It's the old concept of plan, do, check, and act. And we try to help anybody. I've worked with Apple and Dell, and I've worked with startups. So if you have a need, you've got an open mind, we can talk. You can take a look at everything we've got at builditbackwards.com.
Thank you, Daniel. Cynthia, what do you have for us?
Well, first, I enjoyed really very much talking and listening to everybody. I got a few nuggets here and there, and it's just always nice for everybody to interact and exchange ideas and perspectives. And I would just say, if there are any diabetics out there, type 1 or type 2, we stand for empowerment. And if you are looking for a little bit of an edge, just come to thisdiabetic.com and see what we have to offer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Cynthia. Kyle, what do you have for us?
I'd say if anybody's curious about working or doing business overseas, the book actually is on super sale this week. It just went down to $2.99 on the ebook for in the US, only in North America. So you can get a super cheap version just this week for the book. That's a really good starting point just to have some fun, sometimes goofy, definitely embarrassing stories about overseas mistakes and what we can learn from them. And then my website is leadershipnomad.com. Where that's all of my stuff I put on there, as well as LinkedIn, like everybody else. So those are where you can find me.
Well, I have to check out some of your stuff. Love learning of new things. I want to thank you all for joining me on this Monday's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you're still not as important. We appreciate you. We appreciate your support. Please go ahead and share the show. And we appreciate you watching the show and sharing the show, but please support our guests, visit their websites, pick up a couple of copies of their books and support them just as well as we would love to support you. So if you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.